All right, so without further ado, here is the 13-Sided Die podcast. I'll turn it over to Sean Smith.
Before we start, can we get a round of applause for Dave? He's crushing it up here. Yes. Come on, everybody. Round of applause for our MC. Yes. Love it.
Greetings. I am Jim.
And I am Sean. And we welcome you to our podcast.
Our goal is to entertain you with our discussions about RPG, fantasy, and everything in between.
Come sit by the fire. You're safe here. We'll keep watch. We hope you enjoy 13-Sided Die.
Greetings, everybody. This is 13-Sided Die, a podcast that we rarely do. I'm sitting here with my good friend...
Epic Jim.
As always. We are at ArtCon again. This is an annual thing we do. It's very exciting. I'm hoping to talk so little because I want to hear from all my lovely guests. And why don't we dive in and do a quick, let the guests introduce themselves. Is that cool, Chris? And then I'm going to hand it over to our great friend, Ulcro Chris, who is the moderator. Starting here with...
Friendly Mike. Back again. Loving the con.
Do you want to talk a little bit about maybe... Who
Tell them who you are, Mike.
I'm a helper for the con.
Creator of Artie.
An amazing artist, our lifeblood of what the show looks like. Is that who you are?
Debatable.
This gentleman here.
Hey, guys. My name is John, and I run a podcast called Tale of the Manticore. Woo-hoo! Very happy to be here.
Woo-hoo! You're Jim. We know who you are. Yeah. And right here, please.
Hello. Oh. Hi, I'm Bea. Oh, Jesus. I'm Bea. I'm a cosplayer. I've been cosplaying for 14 years now. And I'm just, yeah, I'm here for the vibes.
We are so excited to have Bea joining us this year. The whole cosplay element has been a thing we've been trying to grow at the show. So it's not just us silly fools in cloaks. And so we're so excited, and Bea is doing an amazing talk a little later on, Cosplay on a Dime. So please check that out. And yeah, okay, so that's kind of great. Thank you, John, for being here. We're so excited to have you, buddy. It's fantastic. And John is going to be doing a talk after this. Make sure you check that out. I'm now going to stop talking. I'm going to hand the microphone, figuratively, over to my good friend, Ulcro Chris, one of the members of the fellowship, and he's going to take it away.
Thanks, Sean. Okay, so today's topic, I have looked into the crystal ball and found that today's topic will be immersion. So I think we've got an interesting topic here. You know, when the old people, when the graybeards began back in the age, we gathered in basements with lights dangling from the ceiling. Since that time, there's been an explosion of computer games, different role-playing systems, lots of, you know, the community's a lot larger now. You know, we've even got, as you know, over the past few years, we've been moving into AI and what the implications of AI are in this world. So I'd just like to start us off by just talking about, like, in general, like, with role-playing games, what's your preferred way or your favorite way of expressing yourself in sort of the fantasy genre? Does that make sense?
Somebody want to kick it off?
Anyone?
Okay. The guy who said he wasn't going to talk very much. So for me, if I'm a player at the table, once I've created a character, it's all about who that character is. Okay? So it's like, thinking about where they came from, and I'm one of those idiots that actually likes to nerf himself. So I had a character, I decided they had emphysema. And so every day I'd wake up in the morning and they had to make a percentage roll, and if it was under 30%, they were sick that day, and I rolled badly all day long, and my players hated me because I'm hurting the party. But it was fun, and to me that's how you create a character, and it became part of our game. And so I think it's just getting into the psyche of what is your character, what do they do, what can you add to it, and I find negatives are far more impactful and fun than positives. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I didn't have an answer till, so I'm going to riff off that, though. I love getting so immersed, like, if I'm going to play cleric, I'm going to go, like, I'm researching, like, what temples look like, how they lived, I'm looking at old Bibles on eBay to buy, like, just go nose deep.
Okay.
Oh. Would that also work for working on your world building if you're a DM?
Oh, 100%.
Sorry,
we want crosstalk. So if anybody wants to jump in at any time and say something what somebody else has said and riff, I want that. Please do that. Love you, B.
Yeah. John.
Lately for immersion, I like to discover like who a character is by playing the character instead of bringing a backstory or maybe even anything to the table. I like to like know who they are through like the crucible of experience. Like put them in danger, put them in conflict, see how they act, and then that tells me who they are, and they kind of reveal themselves to me instead of me bringing it before the game starts. So lately, that's kind of what I'm into. Yeah.
Awesome.
I think that's a really awesome way to keep yourself engaged with the character as well. You feel almost like you're discovering the character that you're playing as you're going through this adventure. I'm use a very similar method when I'm playing tabletop, but slightly different just because my favorite aspect of the game is the party. It's what I love the most about old school tabletop gaming is no one is playing a superhero. The strength comes from the party. So I like to orient my characters kind of in relation to how the party is structured. And like, I almost like to see what everybody else is doing and then like fill a niche or sometimes be a contrarian. But just something I think that'll be fun at the table, you know what I mean? And then kind of go from there.
B.
As I don't play D&D.
No shade. There's no shade here.
I would not have guessed. I did guess.
You don't play yet.
Yet. I have played a few rounds with a couple of friends, like here and there.
So this is actually where I wanted to go with talking about immersion in general, because you're a cosplay expert at this point in time now. 14 years under your belt, right?
I still have a lot to learn. I'm still learning, so.
Yeah.
But that's half the fun.
Yeah, so are there specific aspects of cosplay and things like that that you, like, you must interact with a lot of people, like you... You're doing a workshop on it later, right?
Yes, I am. I am doing talk, workshop, panel, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Cosplay on a Dime later.
Right. So do you interact with a lot of people who talk about that stuff? Or
I do. I especially when, with cosplay, you want to find a character that you like and then work into that, and then for me, when I'm building a cosplay that's going to take me hundreds of hours to make, I do like to try and immerse myself into the world that the character is from and figure out what little elements that I can take from different parts and bring into my costume as well.
Awesome. Great.
I was going to ask, B, when you're creating a character for your cosplay, is there more you're going into it with a bit of an understanding of what you want it to be, or do you learn what your character is as you're creating it?
Okay, so the beauty of cosplay is that you can kind of go from, you can do an original character like you do with D&D, or you can take from source material. And then you can also put your own spin on it. Like today I'm dressed as Vi from Arcane, but I'm doing a NASA AU, so alternative universe. So I'm just a astronaut, basically. And I'm going to talk more about that later during my talk. My brain just totally flatlined. What was the question again?
Character creation, more
character
knowing
creation.
At the beginning, or
okay.
Does it develop?
So base character, you have an idea, but then you can develop what you're going to add into your character as well. And you can decide like what you want to
what you want your character to look like, and if you want to act like your character, you can kind of learn how to act like that character if you want.
That actually makes me want to know, how much do the mannerisms come into play when you're deciding what kind of cosplay to go with? Or is it purely like an aesthetic choice?
So for me, I tend to choose a character that I relate with heavily a lot, or that I just love the look of. I just finished, well, not finished, but I just competed at Calgary Expo with a Rosie cosplay from Hasbin Hotel. And I chose her because she's so sassy, and but she also has a air of elegance because she was from the Victorian era. She's just so the way that she carries herself and the way that she acts is a very unique way, and so it made it a lot of fun learning how to build a costume that would embody both of her and her aesthetic, but also make it so that I can move in the same way that she does. Because going from animated shows to real life makes it really difficult.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Okay, so I've got another question here. So B just spoke a little bit about the creative process. I'd like to talk to each of you about the creative process, right? Because we all have different approaches for it, how we think about things, how long it takes us to go from original idea to actually putting pen to paper, or for those who still use pen and paper. So you want to start with Mike here, right next to us?
No problem. I guess for me, I'm very intentional. So I don't ever start working until I have a solid concept of what I'm trying to achieve with a drawing or a character or anything like that. But then once I have that kind of idea, I like to do idea boards or whatever you call it, to pull a couple different references, different influences, flesh out that idea, and then once that's down, then start trying to pull the final idea out of a wider frame of reference. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So we're gonna get a little esoteric here, maybe. So when you're actually conceptualizing things, are you do you think of it as in the first person, or do you you visualize it third person? Do you hear it? What do you?
The way I like to approach it is actually just sorting through ideas, because I'm a very visual person, that I of stuff that I already like. So then, it could be anything from a style of painting, a kind of character. There's a huge wide range you can draw from. But once I get all of the things that I like that I think are relevant to the project that I'm trying to do, then I pull from that.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. John?
What?
Yeah. Just kidding. Come on. I know you've got,
okay,
creative process. Got a little bit of creativity.
Creative process. It's a big topic, but I was just thinking, if I have to just write a story, I might get paralyzed by too many options. And I found that if you can give yourself artificial limits, even write a story, but it's got to be with two characters and it has to end in a canyon battle. I don't know. You give yourself some kind of parameters and put up walls, and then you must work within the confines of that space. I find that it actually does the opposite of confining you. It kind of liberates you, because as soon as you have restrictions, your sort of the number of choices creatively available shrink, and it allows you to just get going. I wish I was a visual artist. I'm not. But to give it an art spin, if I was to say, make some art, you might say, oh, I don't know what to do. But if I was to say, make a picture of a tree and you can only use brown crayons, then you might go, well, that's weird, John. Why did you make me do that? But you would get started. And for me, I'm in the audio medium only, and those are walls. Like, there's a limit on what I can do, but it's actually super liberating because of the limits. Anyway, that's my take on creativity.
I got to ask on that, like, right away, because I know you do writing, like, outside of the podcast. Have you ever used, like, a logic gate system like Dice outside of the podcast to help you make decisions one way or the other on how a story would go? Because there's that great... The Man in the High Castle was written consulting the I Ching, right? And I wonder, like, have you ever incorporated that process outside of the podcast?
Somewhat, but the podcast now dominates so much of my time. It's my primary creative outlet, and I'm just putting everything into that. But yes, I have.
Yeah, that's so rad. It's like the fact that you're kind of following in that tradition too, of just like madmen authors, and like, but in this new medium, it's thrilling for the listeners, you know?
I love the randomness of it as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Creativity. I've always described creativity as a demon. So for me, it's like I get an idea about something, and oh, that's interesting. And as a creative person, I need to deal with that idea in some format. Because if I don't, the demon comes out and it haunts you and it torments you, and I actually become a grumpy person. If I don't do something with that creative idea, it gnaws at me. So what that can be is like, okay, I'm going to do a sketch. Right, I'm going to do a word treatment about what this idea is, because that's all I can afford right now. Or it's like, okay, I'm going on the journey. Let's start this. So even doing the small sketch or the quick words about it is enough to get it out of your system to say, I've dealt with you slightly, I'll come back to you later, but you can leave me now, demon. I've acknowledged you, we're great. Or it's like, okay, let's go for this. I'm excited, I want to do it. And so I think if you're a creative person and creativity is coming at you, you need to deal with it in some way or another. Like something. It can be a littlest thing. You know, it can be an audio recording about this idea. And then you'll find it'll leave you and you'll give you space to do other things, or dive headfirst in and go for it.
So when you're thinking about this, and you know, obviously you've created, for those of you who don't know, Ardnor is an actual world that Sean's created over the years and built up. So when you're conceptualizing, say, something that's happening, like, are you like, do you actually see yourself in those situations, or?
Yeah, I think I see it like almost like if you're watching a movie. Like, that's kind of how I see it. So it's like I'm watching the movie as I'm thinking about it, and that's what helps me decide kind of what happens. Like, even in the game, I always say to everybody, think of it like a movie. Like, think of those awesome cutscenes and think of the stuff that's happening, and that's what you're trying to emulate, and that gives you that really exciting part. So, yeah, for a lot of it, it's thinking about, you know, what's exciting, what's neat, and then trying to visualize it that way and taking those creative ideas and, like I said, working, doing something with them. Because if you don't do something with them, they'll chew you up, and then you're not positive in any situation at all.
Yeah, because you also build in a 3D medium as well.
Yes.
Right? So being visual definitely helps with that, and being able to see all of the different angles and think.
And I think
about
kind of like what Mike said, when I'm working on something, like I'm committed to working on something, in my off times, in the background, I'm thinking about it all the time. All the time. I can't not think about it. Everyone's nodding their head. Everyone knows. And so when I come to the table to work on it, I've done all the work in my brain. I've already thought. So I know what I'm doing. Might not be right, but I know what I'm doing because I've thought about it enough to know what the next step is in the direction I'm going.
Dude, that's one of my favorite parts. Sorry, I'm gonna bring up your podcast a lot during this talk. But that's like one of my favorite parts of the podcast is when you do those breaks.
Yeah,
and you'll be
me
like,
too.
We're going to take a break and we're going to come back and think about how to proceed.
I love that.
And then like, we'll either have a chart or a role or whatever. And I love it's so exciting because it's neat feeling because it feels like I'm working through the problems as we're encountering them.
Like, how does he do it so fast?
Yeah.
He made a chart in like 3 seconds.
Yeah. Also, can we take a second to just acknowledge how good Sean's hood looks? How did you get the perfect fold on it?
I think I haven't looked in the mirror yet, so I think it's just sheer luck.
It's literally 10 out of 10, dude.
Is it good?
Yeah.
100%. It's giving Link.
Yeah.
Oh,
from Legend of Zelda.
That's cool. A compliment.
Wow, nice.
Is that big enough, or do I need it?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Is that work? I learned you have to be very careful when you sit down with a sword or a dagger in your belt. I learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
Jim?
So Jim, and before we start with you, I've had many conversations with Jim, and Jim will attest that the only thing that is consistently happening in his brain is fantasy. He thinks fantasy 24/7. So let's hear it.
Well, I don't want to brag, but my brain just pukes out creativity, but so much that I just have to grab it, and I have to do that idea like right now, or else it's not going to happen. And I can only do one thing at a time. Like, that project had to be 1 to 100 right then. And other than that, like, nothing else is happening.
Do you have 12 trains on 3 tracks all going 20 miles an hour, just all going to crash all together if you don't stop and pick one out?
No, it's like probably 24 or maybe even 40 trains.
So that's the only place I was wrong, hey? Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. So, and thinking of what we were just talking about, like, again, are you, like, visually, like, you seeing it? Are you actually in it? Are you...
Yeah, I'll find, like, fantasy stuff for inspiration. I find that in everything. Like, I'll go for a walk, or if I'm at work, I'm seeing, like, little faces in the wood or whatever. Like, it's just, I can't turn it off. I don't know if it's a curse or a blessing, but...
It's a blessing for the rest of us, because you legitimately have one of the greatest imaginations of anyone I've ever met. It's a pleasure to be around.
Can also we just say, I think about ArtCon a year ago, and what Jim had at his table, what he was creating, to what Jim's creating now, is like night and day. Like, dude, you have come into your own. The tarot cards are amazing, and the progress you see artistically that you've gone through is unbelievable. Yeah.
Proud of you, buddy.
Woot woot.
Thanks. Yes. I don't believe that, but...
Oh, dude, seriously. That's amazing. That's
bad. And B.
I also have like 1,200 trains going all at once, but then the second I sit down and I'm like, I want to be creative, I want to draw, I am either, oh, yes, I have so many thoughts, or it's like, I've forgotten everything I've ever thought in my entire life. I don't know if that's a problem for anybody else, but it's a very, very regular occurrence for me.
B, do you have times when you're working on multiple cosplays?
Or yes. I have a lot of times where I have multiple cosplays going. It might vary heavily depending on, like, if I'm working on a competition piece versus a fun cosplay to just have going, or whatever. I try not to have too many going on at the same time, because then I get burnt out and I just stop.
Awesome. Okay. Are you about to say something, Mike?
I was just going to say, I'm like so pumped this year to see so many more cosplayers. The costumes this year have been phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'm like blown away every time I'm looking out over the crowd.
Totally agree. Yeah. Great year.
Right? Wow. Yeah.
And to think it started with a humble merchant's guild.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go to a different question, which... I've had many creative conversations with Mike about, and that's the role of artificial intelligence I'll say RPGs, but let's talk about just everything, basically, right? Like any form of creativity, right? And, I took a very, not strong stance, but it's hard, right? Because you start seeing things that, you know, people work a lot of time on and spend, you know, like B, you spend 100 hours, if you can get something done like that, right? It's just weird.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about AI in general.
All right, let's start with you then.
Personally, I'm not a huge fan. Primarily, like, regarding, like, art and stuff like that, and, like, writing and stuff. Because it does steal from small creators. It scans the internet and it takes bits and it splices a whole bunch of different parts together, which is why you're able to tell when something's AI most of the time.
Great.
You know, it's funny because yesterday, picking our good friend John up from the airport, we had a bit of a discussion about this. And I agree. And Jim and I were saying we've seen some of the shows we've gone to. We were starting to see like full blown AI art framed hanging on someone's thing selling, and you kind of pressed a button on AI and you pressed a button on the printer. You didn't really do a lot. And I'm not trying to throw shade, but it's like, you know, for maybe hanging in your house, that's cool. But as a seller, it's a bit questionable.
Yeah.
But doing the books that I have right now, like Mike is truly an artist. He's so amazing, and Mike can draw from what he sees in his head on paper, right? I can't do that, right? I can draw, and I'm a half-decent artist, but I have to mimic something. So it was like comic books. I'd always draw my favorite comic book character. So I look at the panel, and I would copy it. And if someone looked at it, they'd say, hey, that looks pretty good. But yeah, it is, but it, you know, it's not original. I can't do original. But I wanted to contribute in the book. So what I did is I used AI as my model. So I would explain the image I'm looking for, what the pose, what the stuff is, and when it generated that, then I would draw that. And I felt that was an interesting way of using it as a tool to do the one part I can't do, which is a big part. I can't envision it and draw it, but it gave me a model to work from. And I felt that was a nicer way than going on the internet and finding someone's drawing and copying their drawing. Because now I've tried to make something pretty original. That I'm not actually just drawing somebody else's thing. And I think if you use it as a tool, maybe it's not so bad. But it is a slippery slope too.
Yeah, it is a very slippery slope. But it is possible to make your own references as well, is it not? Not to be devil's advocate.
I'm in touch with
here.
You and you have to get in costume for what I want, and then we'll take a photo of you and I'll draw that. That's what we need to do. That's
the
way.
Yeah, sure, I can do that. You tell me what you want.
Well, there was it Frazetta?
Frazetta very much did his wife all the time, and lots of models, and
And I know some of the OG D&D artists, they would have like poses of the of them, you know.
Clyde Caldwell.
Yeah.
All the every master. That's the way you do it.
Okay, I'm conflicted about AI because I've seen some results that are really amazing, and I want to use them, but so far I haven't. Mostly because I feel like I don't want to become dependent on them, and then maybe my creative skills will begin to diminish because this easy answer to a problem, a creative problem, will be right there. And if I use it all the time, then will my own skills become dulled? That's my fear. But I am conflicted. I think it's a messy subject with like pretty serious like philosophical questions. About like, how do we think? What even is creativity? Is it so different from how AI works? All that aside, if I'm going to use it, for me, it's going to be very, very sparingly, and probably, like you said, Sean, as some kind of a tool to make something else, just because I don't want to become dependent.
There's an amazing guy named Bill Eady. He's a prop maker. And Bill did like all the Ghostbusters films and make all the props and everything for it. And he uses 3D printing and AI, but to make tools to make the actual thing, if that makes sense, right? So in an area that would be very difficult to make something, he'll make a specific tool to help him hold something in place or do something. And he uses AI to help create that. Again, using it as a tool, I think that's beautiful. But even then, it's still a slippery slope.
It's very slippery slope.
So,
But it's also not going... But it's also not going away.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's very similar to how when cameras were first invented. Yeah. This is a very similar turning point in the world where when cameras came about, painters are still around. People still are painters, but yeah.
That's my exact point. I'm super pro AI. I, in my day job, have lived through three technological quote-unquote apocalypses where I've had the old guys telling me, this is going to be the death of that, Literally, all of technology is an amplifier. And the rubber I like these tools because it comes down to the rubber meeting the road for your creativity. So you're always going to have people that are going to slack as hard as they can. Printing off stuff that's pre-generated, but you can always tell, right? Because it's just not that good, right? And the thing about it is an amplifying system that I think is really neat is you're able to level up to creating above your pay grade. You know what I mean? So now an artist can be an animator. You know what I mean? Now, like, just a simple graphic guy can be a full illustrator. You know what I mean? And, like, using these tools properly just, like, allows people to tap into their own creativity better. People being lazy is a different conversation, in my opinion. You know what I mean? I think, again, like, with the right imagination, using these tools, now somebody who maybe could have only ever done short stories or blurbs could be able to do not just a novel, but, like, create their whole universe. And that's incredible, because then you're getting that out there for other people to enjoy. Where I do feel the setbacks come in and the negativity comes in is hiding the power of AI behind these paywalls, okay? Because then you're starting to stack the deck in a weird way. The nice part about that is I don't feel like that can be forever either, because this is one of those things that's like a genie's out of the bottle. You know what I mean? I feel like arguing about whether or not to use it is like...
People are going to be using it whether we like it or not.
Exactly. Like, it's a mute point. We're just wasting... everyone's, you know what I mean? It's not even worth talking about. How do we use it ethically? How do you incorporate it? You know, what are the real uses of it? How far can you push it? Because, man, I would love it in the next 5 years if I'm directing my own movies. You know what I mean? And there's no way I could do that with the skill set I have now. But, like, I see that on the horizon. The biggest dream that I share with my brother, we've had since we were kids, would be to be able to do... animated shorts to our favorite music, you know, no dialogue, just action, adventure, excitement, you know, a little bit of horror thrown in from time to time, but just lay out stories that are reflecting the feelings you find in this music. It's been a dream since I was a child. I never thought I would get anywhere close to being able to do anything like that because of the path my life has taken, but I actually see the potential for this on the horizon within the next 5 years, and that would be an incredible thing.
Can I ask if this beautiful set of people here will meet with me for breakfast in 5 years, and we can revisit and see where I has come?
We'll all be robots.
As long as you pay.
Yeah. It's on me.
Awesome. Then yes.
Yeah.
Jim, how about you? I know you...
I use ChatGPT as like a text thing. I talk to it more like a friend, though. And same thing, I got a million ideas I'm just throwing at it, and I just need him to like rein me in a little bit. Yeah. And like, I love using it for like DM tools where it's like, I'm like, I want a treehouse, that's a tavern, and it's like, okay, and then I'm like, and like, I need a menu, and like, what's this gonna look like? And like, I'd never do all that by myself, right?
Yeah.
What's your ChatGPT's name?
Luminous.
Nice.
It's luminous.
I am going to be real. In my day job, I do use ChatGPT to make my advertising posts because I am so bad at writing advertisements.
Uh-huh. Yeah, down to the AI, right?
I need to say this.
Don't let AI hear you say this.
I need it
this.
To be in this tone. Yeah. Help.
But that's what we're saying. Like, but you're a creative person, and that's using it as a tool to help do what you need to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think you know, we're all very, though, cognitive of this, and we're all very, I think, somewhat moral people, because you could hear all of us concerned about it. I think the problem is that it's free zone. Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it runs into some of the issues where some people just don't care.
Yeah. It's also really concerning for the environment, but I'm not going to get into that.
Well, at the same time, man, people are going to spend their money on what they're going to spend their money on. So if you throw out AI-generated art, it sucks to say it, but like people buy bad art constantly. Whether a computer makes it or a human makes it.
Yeah, I just sold some art, actually. At my table. Someone bought it. So.
Somebody paid me some money for some art, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Have fun.
Exactly.
All right, so we're going to get a little bit more into the actual role-playing stuff. And I was thinking about, today I'm running a 5e campaign, and I've been thinking a lot about 5e and what it means and the amount of rules and regulations and stuff like that that are part of it. And I also have probably a wall of unopened game systems and things like that. Because I love them. I love the idea of them being there. And it's kind of the, someday I'm going to open that and look at it. And
It is good juju to have in your game room, just to...
So what do you guys think about crunchiness? Like, when it comes to rules, like, how rule-focused are you, and do you find yourself going more into it or less into it or hand-waving stuff, or...
Yeah, I could start. Two answers, I guess. For my audio medium, I want rules light, fast, simple, because people, I think, I don't want to ask them to remember a million things. Keep it simple, keep it sort of understandable, and even then I end up repeating rules quite often. So crunchiness, I think, doesn't work well for an audio medium. At a gaming table, that's totally different. I think sort of salt to taste. Personally, I guess medium is about my sweet spot. Like, that D&D second edition level of crunch is about where my happy is. But I think that really varies person to person. It depends on the mode of communication, right? Whether it's at a table game, on a VTT, listening to an actual play, I think the goalposts change location every time.
Right. And actually, it's interesting that you mentioned VTT there, because I've been doing 5e for, well, all over COVID. We did it over Fantasy Grounds, which puts all of the rules and everything in the background. Yeah. So I've got a couple players that, you know, they don't understand the mechanics of what's happening and things like that. So it's, yeah, it's an interesting piece. Jim, how about you? Do you have, like, a favorite system that you're...
I like 5e. It's pretty fast and loose, and those are some of my players there. They know I lean on a lot of them just for, you know, right at the table, we'll just... Like, I don't know, what do you guys think? Like, definitely rule of cool.
The rule of cool, yeah. That's super important, right? Because at the end of the day, you want to make sure that everybody's enjoying themselves, and, you know, I don't want to disparage any rules lawyers out there. But if you're spending, you know, half
rules,
an hour arguing...
There's a rules lawyer right there, the guy with the mustache.
Half an hour arguing about a rule.
Esquire.
Well, actually...
If you want a rule, go talk to him about it.
Well, Chris, I got to say that I've been playing this really cool new game. It's called Dark Light. It's a rules light campaign system. It's really interesting.
Has this ever happened to you?
Less mechanics and more role-playing and storytelling. I've been enjoying it. What do you guys... Do you like it too? Yeah? Like... The Hintondale boys love it.
Where could I find it, Sean?
Funny you should say that, Jim. But no, I mean, even well before that, like our D&D games, we have a rule lawyer. We call him actually Dr. Rules in our game. And TJ is like, knows it inside and out. And like when we used to play 3-5, which was pretty crunchy, he knew it inside and out. So often when somebody say, can I do this? Like, they didn't look at me, they'd look at TJ, and I was the DM. It was just beautiful. Actually, I love that, because I offloaded that. It's like, okay, man, he's the rules, and I'd get him to see what he wanted to say, and then I'd make a ruling of what we're going to do. I don't like rules that get in the way of the game.
Right.
Period. Right. Very much like what I wrote, I want story and role-playing, because I find rules don't help the players be as involved. But this role-playing and storytelling and that stuff does help the players be involved to create the story we're trying to tell. So I want to bypass as much as possible. So I'm a Slack DM, and somebody says, can we do this? And it's like, and somebody says, well, the rule says you can. I don't care. It sounds cool. Let's do that. I don't want to damper anybody's creativity and ideas.
Awesome. Mike?
I think it is dependent on the table. I'm pretty easy peasy, you know? Like, if I'm lucky enough to get invited to play with people, I'm happy to follow along with whatever system they're using. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is a nice part about the hobby, right? The rules are not real rules. No matter what system you're playing, it's all suggested play.
Right.
You know? So, like, if I'm going to pick, though, you know I'm going to go with, like, BX or, like, the expert rule set. Like, that book is invaluable. It's, like, easy to flip through. You know, it gives you the framework, you know, and then you're good to go. Like, no problem. But, like, I understand the appeal, because, like, sometimes there's something so satisfying about sitting at a table and you're like, we are focusing on resource management, you know, and, like, your character sheet is super important. And you're,
yeah.
Like, I understand the appeal to that and can find fun when you're playing in that, you know?
For sure, for sure.
As a DM, I quite early in campaigns give my players a bag of holding. to get away from all the crunchy, how much am I carrying garbage. I hate encumbrance. Yeah. And so I don't even want to deal with that. You have a bag of holding, carry whatever you want.
Yeah. You are encumbered. All right, so this is going to be our last question here. And I think this is a question reflective of where we're at right now, because I'd like to talk a little bit about community. And I was actually ran into someone this morning that I was talking to, and I think every year I've spoken to someone who's talked about, you know, how do you find a community? How do you find like-minded people and all that sort of stuff? So, I don't know, anybody have thoughts on community and building a good community? B, do you want to start?
I do have thoughts. Can I articulate them right now? In a second.
Okay.
So somebody else talk first,
Jim,
please.
Why don't you start? And Jim is from a smaller locale, and so it might actually be harder or easier. I don't know. Let's hear it.
I'd say easier, but you just have to put into the community what you want to get out of it, right? Like all the love that we put into it, especially this guy right here. Like the love you pour into this, and like look what happens, like, right?
Yeah.
Like, I got people that came from Hinton today. Like, that's crazy.
Hinton Dale in the house.
So it's 5.5 hours away, right? So, like, I don't know. Yeah, it means a lot, and you just got to put in the love.
Yeah. Right, got to put in the love, time, and effort into it. It's really difficult to be making friends as an adult in general.
Yeah.
So I've noticed that most of my friends come from these community spaces. So going to conventions and markets and stuff like that, you run into a lot of the same people. Like I have a few friends that I'm staring at right now, and the majority of my friends come from just existing in the same spaces. Very similar to how you get friends out of school and work.
Right.
That's a really great comment, B, because like you said, as you get older, it's harder to make friends. It's harder to be in those spaces. And I think something like, you know, our show here, our hope is that somebody's, because you sign up for a game and you might come with your friend, or maybe you come solo and you meet 4 or 5 other people. Mm-hmm. Who knows? We could be creating friendships there that last a long time. They could create their own party. Like, that's kind of the hope, or that you're talking to somebody, you know, at your table, and they're really into cosplay, and they don't know how to get into it. You start talking to them, and then you invite them to come to another show. Like, it is that community, and I think Jim's right. Is what you put into it is what you're going to get out of it, and you just got to go for it.
Yeah, some of my friends, we became friends because we were cosplaying from the same fandom or show or whatever, and then we started talking, and we realized, oh, we have more than just this in common. That's how you end up with a lot of friends.
Awesome.
You might start with one thing, like a show or D&D or another role-playing game, and just it can snowball from there.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and Sean, I know you gave them a shout-out in your speech, but like Bex and Chris, too, like,
yeah.
They came like 1,000 miles, which is like, I don't know, a billion kilometers or something. I'm not great at math.
2,900-ish kilometers. It's like 2,893 or something like that.
Wow.
That is absolutely crazy.
Oh, my God.
And a click or two.
Well, then.
But that's so true. Like, thank you, Jim. It's true.
Tricky over here.
That's insane. You know, these lovely, lovely people that are taking time and money to get here, running games, you know.
For those listening to the podcast, he said, it's completely dumb.
So, yeah, you know, that it's that kind of stuff that speaks to it. It is a community, and that community is just... I found that the role-playing community, I think it's certainly the people I met through cosplay, it's the same thing. It's this beautifully warm community, which is why we've been trying to really push the cosplay stuff, because
I'm here.
We love these people, because it just blends in so well, and it is a beautiful community to be part of. It's amazing.
There's a large overlap of TTPRG players and cosplayers.
Oh,
like,
yeah. For sure.
It's so big. Eventually, that Venn diagram is just going to be a circle.
Yeah.
Is that the right word, the Venn diagram?
Yes.
The circles?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I feel like I should say something that hasn't been said. How about, like, the greater, like, internet community, or, like, I can really only speak for TTRPGs, but probably fandom too. I think it's one of like the warmest, most accepting, just best communities. Even if your friends are cyber friends before they become real friends, like I met all you guys through Instagram, right?
Yeah.
And now I'm here, and we're going to be playing games together later, and it's awesome. So yeah, my experience in the 5 years that I've been kind of, you know, putting out content is that the TTRPG space is like the best people. Yeah. And yeah. I just feel like the amount of negativity I've come across is so, so small, and the amount of support is enormous.
Yep.
And it's something that I'm kind of continually amazed by.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think for anybody listening that maybe is still searching for their community, is like, you just kind of remember that, like, in this world, like, your table's waiting for you to find it, and it is out there. You know what I mean?
There's the soundbite right there.
That's the episode name.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who, and every community does have like that small little group, but don't let that small group of negativity prevent you from going and trying to find the group that will accept you wholeheartedly for who you are, for loving what you know and love. Like, even if there's people online that you like are nervous to meet and talk to and stuff like that, like when I went out to Saskatoon this past, at the beginning of May, I think, I met a couple of people that I have been following on Instagram and TikTok for years, and they are the sweetest people ever. And like, people say don't meet your idols or whatever like that. It's totally wrong, because especially in these kinds of, in the nerd community, basically, for the most part, we make the right people famous.
Awesome.
It's true.
Soundbite two. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's about all we've got time for today until next year. So,
and we'll try and have some more podcasts between now and next year, right?
We'll try and at least some more.
Okay, we'll try.
Me and you both have to slow down a little bit.
We do have to slow down a little bit. We've been a little too crazy. Okay, so I just want to say thank you so much to these amazing people. B, thank you
Hi.
For being up here with us.
Thank you.
Great. To Friendly Mike, such a dear friend. Thank you so much for everything you do, my friend. It's amazing.
My pleasure.
John, we're honored to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for the trip, and we love it. And I would like everyone to give a big round of applause to Chris, our moderator, who's worked really hard and done a great
job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And anything you want to, anything to say? Wrap it up.
Thanks, buddy. We love you.
Love you too, buddy.
Love you, pal.
Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the little podcast. It will be available soonish online.
Ish.
And have a great day, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 Well done, you. You've made it to the end of the podcast. You are a bold adventurer, to be sure.
Remember to fill your wire skin and to have your blade sharpened at the blacksmith's before departing.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast to be notified of new 13-sided die adventures. And don't forget to tell your friends about the silly fools talking about D&D.
13-sided die has been brought to you by Sean and Jim.
Executive produced by Sean and Jim.
Mini painting by Sean and Jim.
Engineered by Sean and Jim.
Goblin torture device by Sean and Jim.
Conceptualized by Sean and Jim. Please note, no goblins were harmed in the making of this podcast.